Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hi everyone, it's Jenny here again, and welcome to this episode of the Cathedral Podcast. Today we want to talk about the subject of science and faith. And we are going to do it in an interesting new format too. So first off, my guest today is Mr. Keith Leong. He hails from the Cathedral itself, and he is a teacher here in Singapore and has done a string of degrees, notably a Master of Studies in Science and Religion. Fascinating combination at the University of Oxford. Hi, Keith.
Hi.
Yes, I also mentioned a new format. So today, co-hosting with me is my colleague, Pei.
Hello, everyone.
Hey, Pei. Okay, so let's get going. First off, why is science a problem for faith? Is it a problem at all?
Hey, first off, thank you for having me, Jenny and Pei.
Welcome.
So the question, why science and faith are don't mix, don't seem
yeah,
to mix.
Yeah, people always think it's like oil and water, they don't mix. Mm. Is that true?
Well, I think that faith and science are rather broad terms. And I think that's one of the reasons why there has been so much disagreement on their relationship.
Mm.
If we focus on Christian faith and on science in particular, it's still very difficult to tease out because, you know, it depends on the time period that we're looking at and also
that's right.
What the scientific enterprise looked like at that period in time.
So there was a time when people used the word faith and they thought something. And when people use the word science, then they thought something. I mean,
that's
in
right.
Latin, science, sensio, simply means knowledge, right?
That's right, yeah.
So knowledge right. and faith, they are not in contradiction. So tell us a little bit about this whole time period thing. How has the concept and understanding of science and faith evolved over time to get to where we are today, where we, you know, naturally struggle with the notion that they conflict and they are not bedfellows?
Yeah, so I think that one great way to enter into this field would be to look at historians of science, for example,
uh-huh.
like the historian Peter Harrison. So in his books, he has pointed out that many primitive forms of science did pop up episodically in, for example, ancient Greece, China,
yes. mm-hmm.
during the golden age of Islam, but it mostly flourished in 16th and 17th centuries in Europe.
Right, right.
And the argument seems to be that it's because of the theistic assumption that God created laws that we could uncover
we
for ourselves.
We can discover, that's right.
Yeah.
So there were, in the history of humanity, periods where we all know gunpowder and, you know,
yes.
sundial and all that, but the whole idea of science as a really discipline that people can pursue and have sub-disciplines within it.
That's right.
It actually sits on top of the theistic understanding of the world. That because there is a creator, there is a sense of order, there are universal principles we can uncover.
Hmm. Yeah, that seems to be a consensus among some historians of science.
All right.
So as you said, Jenny, before modern science, science or the word for science, Latin scientia, really just meant knowledge. And so believers would have no problem accepting that their faith consisted of scientia. And so the kinds of scuffles that we see today between faith and science became more pronounced from the scientific revolution onward.
That's right.
As scientific methods discovered more about the physical world, they seemed to disconfirm what the scriptures had to say about creation, nature, and the origin of man. And because of the way, for example, the reformers read the scripture, which was literalistic or real, had some this idea of like scientific realism,
yeah.
that solidified that split.
Yeah, I can understand that. Just the other day at dinner, my son was saying, you know, how do I answer my paper in school because I can't use the word evolved? And I say, why can't you use the word evolved? You know, so it is somehow, even as a young child, he's thinking that since I believe in the creation of the world, you know, in 6 days, I cannot believe in evolution.
Right.
Yeah, so that's a huge subject. But that illustrates that whole oil and water, it doesn't mix. And how does it go together?
So then, Keith, can you maybe spend a bit of time unpacking for us the basic philosophy of science, nature of the Bible and church tradition? You know, where do science and faith meet and where don't they? Can Christians be confident in what they believe?
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's a great question, Pei.
This is a meaty and complex question, so thank you very much for that. But
Slowly, slowly. Yeah. We go slowly.
Yeah. Let's start with the philosophy of science. It's important to know every discipline, what is it there for? Mm. You know, what's it seeking to do?
The philosophy of science is also a very broad discipline. It is, however, chiefly concerned with the foundations, methods, and implications of science. And I think that as a tool, it can be quite helpful for someone looking to understand the interface between, say, science and the scriptures, science and theology, things like that.
Yep.
And I think that one of the things within the philosophy of science that's worth, that's helpful in this regard would be the distinction between methodological naturalism and philosophical naturalism.
Right.
So, ooh, can you put that in plain English for us? For some of our listeners?
Sure, sure.
And maybe myself.
So philosophical naturalism is the view that there is only the physical world.
Right.
And everything that happens in the world can be explained in the end, fully and only with reference to natural phenomena.
Okay.
So as believers, this is something that clearly we cannot accept. Because
that's
we believe
a completely materialist view of the world.
That's right.
Okay.
That means there's no God, there's nothing beyond nature. Mm. And that must be distinguished from methodological naturalism, which is somewhat more modest. So methodological naturalism does not claim that all that there is nature. What it in fact just claims is that using empirical and naturalistic methods to find out more about the world is one of the most effective ways to figure out things about the world. And so...
So there's a space in that for things beyond the material that we don't understand.
That's
But the starting point, however, is we work with the material we have.
That's right.
And then we posit from there.
That's right.
Possibly.
I mean, that's why scientists work on methodological naturalism. I mean, there are an incredible number of scientists in the world who are religious, have faith in some way or another. And yet, when they're in the lab, they don't say, oh, it's because, you know, I prayed to this God that this thing happened.
Of course.
You know what I mean? They focus their approaches.
I pray, then my test tube works now. It's bubbling over.
Yeah, so when they try to understand some phenomena, they always look for natural causes. In the 19th century, when we were still doing astronomical research and we didn't really know what the solar system looked like, there was some evidence that, for example, the movement of Uranus suggested that Newtonian mechanics was flawed. Newtonian mechanics would be the dominant theory of gravity at the time.
Right.
But scientists didn't just say, for example, that therefore there must be a supernatural explanation for this. They posited the mechanisms of Newtonian gravity, and because they posited that, they believed therefore that there must be an additional planet beyond Uranus that could explain Uranus's orbit, and because of that, they tested this proposal and they predicted and discovered the planet Neptune.
So, otherwise we would never know Neptune is there.
That's right. So, I mean, even though now Einstein's theory of general relativity has supplanted Newtonian gravity, regardless, his centuries-old equations can approximate the effects of gravity under certain conditions and has been used, for example, to bring Apollo 8 and the first humans to the moon in 1968.
Mm.
So I think that this idea of methodological naturalism has a lot of fruitfulness.
Right.
Because when you are presented with a difficulty, scientists don't just say, oh, by the way, this is probably just a miracle. Or God did it supernaturally.
They always try to find an explanation.
That's right. And because of that, sometimes they really do find very interesting and powerful explanations for phenomena around us.
That's interesting.
So, Keith, some people are going to say, you know, the Bible is not very scientific. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the sun rising. Someone might say, is the mustard seed really the smallest seed in the universe?
Jesus said that, right?
Yeah. So how would you respond to questions like that?
Okay, so Jesus said that in the book of Mark, chapter 4, verse 31. That was in the context of him talking about the expansion of the kingdom of God. And he claims that the mustard seed, or he purportedly claims that the mustard seed was the smallest of all seeds on earth. And as you said, as you rightly said, we know that this is not the smallest seed in existence. Even farmers of that geographical region and time would have been familiar with seeds that were smaller, like the black orchid. So I think it is clear that Jesus was not teaching botany.
Right.
He was explaining the nature of the kingdom and can therefore be excused for using an example that does not conform to scientifically accurate descriptions of reality that our culture compels us to expect.
And it's interesting that his listeners did not react to that either.
That's right.
Tells
so
you something.
I think rather than, I mean, this can be applied more broadly to the scriptures themselves. I think Rather than using scientific language when commenting on natural phenomena, the scriptures tend to adopt something that we might call a phenomenological style.
Mm.
So this is the language of appearance.
Right.
And possibly they did this because it is the most straightforward way to describe things and the lowest common denominator for anyone to grasp and understand it. And I think that in the same way that, for example, when we say that the sun rises, we are not saying that therefore we think that the sun revolves around the earth.
Yeah.
The scriptures have every right to describe nature exactly as they saw them without otherwise invalidating what is the theological or intended message behind what they are trying to say.
I see. Yeah, that's a very important point.
Yeah, it's Christ wanted to help people understand rather than to disprove what they already knew and to trump them in some way. He wanted to be
It was the purpose
understood.
Of the message.
Right.
And also just, I think that's a very important point that scripture was describing things as is, taking it sort of at face value. It's not there to dig underneath everything and give an explanation, certainly not a scientific explanation for things.
Okay. So how in your whole journey have you, remained grounded and...
As a Christian, you're so fascinated by science and all that.
Thank you.
How has it been for you?
As an academic?
So my background is I went to study theology overseas in the UK. And I think that I experienced what a lot of people who go into Bible college, seminary, and also studying religious studies in a university go through, which is a sense of cognitive dissonance.
Oh, yes. Tell me about that.
You realize that there's so many, ideas and so many ways of understanding faith that you're quite surprised that this is not something that is more explicitly taught or you're exposed to in your faith tradition. And at first it's quite discomforting, but after a while you stop having that emotional reaction of like, oh, this is sounds incredibly heretical, but more like that's actually quite interesting. Why do people think this way and why have people thought this way?
Right. And so you engage the inquiry rather than just get threatened.
So feeling more curious than you are defensive. But that takes time. And it took time for me also.
Yeah.
And so I think that, just for general advice, I think anyone who's exploring this interface should have strong views, but held lightly. That means that, when their beliefs are disconfirmed or challenged by certain forms of evidence, that they should not be defensive, but instead they should be curious. And they should look around for... to try and find a satisfactory answer to their question without necessarily defaulting to a position that they already had before.
And so it's not like we delve into science and we worry about it disproving our faith, but maintain a posture of curiosity.
Yeah.
And maybe you will find that your faith is more solid than that. And in fact, your faith could be broadened and deepened as a result. That's been your experience.
Yes, it has so far.
Wow. Okay. I've heard this joke growing up about three mothers that went to a pastor to ask for prayer for their sons. So the first mom said, pray for my son to become a doctor. And the second one said, pray for my son to be an engineer. The third one told the pastor, my son isn't very bright. Maybe you can pray that he'll become a clergy. What does this joke tell you?
Well, in years past, holy orders were considered a prestigious and intellectually respectable calling. But I think with the secularization of society, especially Western society, maybe this notion seems to have subsided, which is why I guess there is humor in this joke.
Sad humor, yeah.
Yeah, but from my experience among the ministers I know, this is really far from the truth. Most of them are highly intellectual. They love to read and have advanced degrees, PhDs. When I was in the UK, I met three, actually, ministers who were pursuing PhDs there in theology, and they were very well read and incredibly intellectual. And all of them also had professional degrees from before they entered the ministry. So, I wonder where this...
So maybe this stereotype comes more from the pastoral functions that we play?
I think so. Because a minister has to demonstrate some proficiency in these things when they're studying. However, their day-to-day work is far, far more pastoral. And I think it's that pastoral nature of that work that is most visible. And therefore, it contributes to the stereotype that this profession is not intellectually demanding and that ministers are not intellectually valuable.
Sadly. Ouch. But it's not true. Okay. there's this typical perception in a way of theology la, that it's so far out, it's got to do with God. It doesn't relate to the real world, right?
That's right. Yeah.
But I'm sure you have a lot to say. Speak into that.
Well, I mean, all I can say is really just I've noted that perception, because theology and these sorts of disciplines, the outward perception of it is that it's engaged in intellectual sophistries that don't really say very much to the pressing concerns of the world right now. And so it's because of that perception, I think, that theologians and also philosophers, basically anyone outside of the STEM fields, are not really considered to be people who can add value to the world.
Yeah, so right now, everybody is about STEM and technocrats and all that, and thinking that AI and technology is going to save our world. But I don't think it's as simple as that.
Yes, I think some of the most pressing issues facing the world today, like future pandemics, artificial intelligence and the alignment problem, climate change and the significant humanitarian harms that can come to the world's poorest because of climate change. A lot of these things, yes, I mean, technocrats, economists and people who are more of the hard sciences kind of people are working hard at this issue. But I also think that a lot of these issues do require a humanities kind of touch to it.
Yeah,
I think
the social sciences.
That's right.
That's a lot to contribute to this.
Right. I think theology
like a more
also,
holistic approach. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah,
that's right.
More full orbed, looking at it from different perspectives.
Yeah. Exactly.
Really investigating more thoroughly.
That's right. I think that theology and even the humanities, for example, can offer a moral or theistic framework with which to engage in these activities. If not, there may not be particular justification for why it is that, for example, we would choose life extension research for the sake of the health of people rather than life extension research for its own sake.
Right.
Where there are people right now who are trying to do that just so that they can live forever.
And clearly
faith has something to say about that.
Exactly.
True.
So faith has a lot to say. Speak into science, actually.
So you might say even the term the advancement of society necessarily includes a view of morality and
definitely,
you know, which is informed by faith,
mechanistic advancement, right?
Which would I think benefit if it's informed by faith. I think so.
And I mean, if you scrub anybody, everyone lives by certain value systems, right?
I think the technocrats are at their very core also theologians and philosophers.
Yeah, we all are
who are thinking about issues.
That's right. They have to make philosophical decisions. Even though they don't think that they are.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, and I think someone has also once said that truly good theology results in good living, in praxis that is, you know, effective and moral. Right?
Great theology results in great doxology and great living. It's true.
So, I mean, in closing, what would you advise a young person interested in the sciences, you know, what would you tell them about integrating their faith with their field of study and work?
Okay, well, I think that one thing that they could do would be to be familiar. Be familiar with the cutting edge of the interface. I think that it would not do them very well to read, for online blogs or things that are a little bit more where their veracity cannot really be determined. I think that it's good to look at people whose works are published in established academic journals in this area, like Zygon, Theology and Science, things like that. Some of the big names in the movement, you can branch off from there as well.
Zygon.
Yes, that
nice,
sounds...
Nice. Yeah, sounds out there, man.
Intriguing, to say the least.
So another one would be also, I think, to investigate it into the ground. I think if you have any question about faith, and this applies outside of faith and science as well, if you have a question, you shouldn't be afraid to investigate it into the ground so that you can come to some conclusion that satisfies you.
Mm-hmm.
And don't be afraid to change your mind along the way, because that's the nature of reality and of life, that we will have to change our minds many times to get at the truth.
Right. Wow. Thank you so much, Keith, for this invigorating conversation. Now I know there is a journal called Zygon, amongst many other things.
Yes.
Oh, there's one more thing I'd like to plug as well.
Oh, sure.
Unbelievable. I think some of our listeners would have heard of it. So the Unbelievable podcast.
He's on a podcast plugging for another podcast.
That's right.
It's fine.
On Premier
Christian
Radio.
We live in an
Radio.
Age of technology.
Right.
This one is really good though, because he always gets at least two people to who hold some a different opinion about something related to
and
faith.
And they debate?
To debate.
Oh, yeah, that's brilliant.
So I'm all going the sparks to, will fly.
Yeah. Wow, I'm going to subscribe to The Unbelievable because it's unbelievable if I can understand any of what they're saying. Again, thank you very much, Keith, for being on the Cathedral Podcast. Tears from Pei and myself. Bless you.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks, Keith.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.